This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Talk@talklouisiana.org is our email. And First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support for our program, and we thank them immensely. Again, 877-217-5757. At the start, it's just you and me, and so if you have something on your mind 12 days before the election, this is the time to get it off your chest. That's what we're here for, and there is a whole lot of shaking going on, as Jerry Lee Lewis used to say, and 12 days from an election, and tonight's the final debate, one of two between President Trump and Vice President Biden in Nashville. And the mics will be muted at the start, but it could be a case in which fireworks erupt. The president is trying to launch a come-from-behind win, as he did 4 years ago, and this time he's behind even farther than he was against Hillary Clinton. 9 points in the latest New York Times poll, which tracks other polls. And the most startling evidence of what's going on in our country is that in that New York Times poll, which was published yesterday, as in Wednesday, the president actually leads among men in this country by 6 points, 48% to 42%. He's ahead among men, but yet he is behind among women, 58% to 35%. Down by 23, a gender gap that is enormous. And as we approach November 3rd, if Joe Biden wins, and right now it looks like he's the odds-on favorite, it will be because of women. It's similar in a different way than the 1991 governor's election and the U.S. Senate election of 1990, when David Duke ran ahead among whites in both of those elections by substantial margins, getting 60% of the white vote against Bennett Johnston. But he lost because of an overwhelming tide against him from minority voters. And that's where we are 12 days before the election. So I guess the question that is fertile for our listeners, among others, is why is there this gender gap? A lot of men like the president, despite his vitriol, and obviously he is a man who is not disciplined in any number of ways, but they like him, and a lot of women despise him. And it has to be more than politics. It also means we have many divided households in this country. Some people, of course, will be voting, mostly women, for Joe Biden, and a lot of men will be voting for Donald Trump. In Louisiana, it's still Trump territory. It would be all but a miracle if Joe Biden were to win Louisiana, but it will take a miracle for Donald Trump to pull this one out and become a reelected president. And we generally do reelect our presidents. Look at the last three times out, Clinton, Bush, Obama, they were all reelected. Donald Trump, it appears it'll be a different story. But tonight could change the inertia if there's some big moment in this debate and Joe Biden will be in all but the four corners approach because he doesn't want to make a big mistake. Your number, 877-217-5757. It's Lou on Highland. Lou on Highland, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi. Good talking to you. I wanted to bring up a point that seems to be neglected. When Mardi Gras was being planned, there's a task force in New Orleans, included people from the federal government, Homeland Security, et cetera. Trump knew in advance about the virus and how dangerous it was, but from my understanding is no mention was ever made during this meeting, this planning about the virus. And you can check at how it started in New Orleans, and it spread to Jefferson Parish, finally reaching Baton Rouge, and then throughout the state of Louisiana into Mississippi, and now it's throughout almost all the Southeastern Conference states. Why are very few people mentioning this? Why is Louisiana so much in favor of Trump after what has gone on?
Well, I think many people say whatever the president did, it wouldn't have changed the course of events, but we do know, based on Bob Woodward's book, that on January 28th, the president was informed that this was a pandemic that was going to affect the United States, that it was airborne, could be transmitted rather easily, highly contagious. And on February 7th, he told that to Bob Woodward, and Mardi Gras, of course, came for the most part after those dates, and the president did not come forward to the American people and tell us what he knew. Now, he says he didn't want to cause widespread panic, and that's his stated reason is why he didn't tell the American people the full story. And once again, it's one of those cases where people who are against the president condemn him for that, and those who are for him give him a pass for the most part. And I think that's why in Louisiana and in most of the Southeastern Conference, the 11 states, the people will vote for Donald Trump again. But two states that may not go to Trump this time that are in the SEC that are quite important. In fact, they're the two biggest states in the Southeastern Conference outside of Texas. That's Florida and Georgia. And in Georgia, the president is apparently in such dire straits that he's pulled his advertising, and that's not a good sign, even though that one is truly too close to call. 877-217-5757. Rose in Oak Villa. Rose, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I wanted to say Trump said he was the president fighting a war against the COVID, but yet not once has he put the mask on in front of people, and I think he has led our people the wrong way. He's our leader. He should show us what to do, and from the onset of this pandemic, he has not.
All right.
And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Rose. Now, the president does occasionally wear a mask. He usually does not. But right now, he even has a commercial in which he's wearing a mask. So he has been had a late conversion to mask wearing. But for the most part, he has been a guy who has downplayed this virus from the start. And as we know, we're now approaching 230,000 Americans who have died of COVID-19. And in many states, we're having another wave. North Dakota, in particular, small state, but per capita, the highest rate of COVID-19 in the country now. North Dakota, the home state of one Dale Duard Brown. And one of his hotspots of Minot is one of the hotspots in the country right now for COVID-19. 877-217-5757. John in Livingston. John, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. You mentioned earlier about Louisiana basically giving Donald Trump a pass on so many things. And one of the things that bothers me a lot these days, I find people, and especially those in this part of the country, speaking in some sort of code. I'm hearing now that we're not voting for the person, we're voting for the policy. That's a shift from 2016 when they were so many Louisianians were voting against Hillary Clinton. But now they've gone from the so-called lesser two evils to coming up with this language to somehow justify their continued support of Donald Trump. And that is disingenuous at the very least, just an outright lie, more likely. And I'd like your thoughts on that.
I think that's most evident when it comes to the president's personal conduct and the fact that evangelicals support him. In fact, evangelical voters are the most loyal to the president. And yet we have a man who consorted with adult film star, paid her off, has had several other affairs, allegedly raped a woman in a department store. He has not conducted himself the way a man, quote, of Christ would. But yet he has now appointed three conservative Supreme Court justices, one of whom, the New Orleanian Amy Coney Barrett, is about to be confirmed. And evangelicals like that, Gene Mills, who's always been gracious when asked to come on this show, he says, I like his judges. That's why he likes the president of the United States. And I guess the question is whether liberals would act the same. If Trump were a Democrat, and he was until very recently, and he appointed three liberal Supreme Court justices, would Democrats be giving him a pass? I'm sure some would, but I have a feeling it wouldn't be as intense as it is in the evangelical wing of the Republican Party, which can't get enough of Donald Trump. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. You know, Trump loves to bring up Hunter Biden. And I just read where Trump's son, Eric, took a photograph of what he said was Joe Biden's palatial mansion, when in fact Joe Biden sold that 23 years ago. He bought it when it was run down and renovated it and sold it, but he hasn't lived there in 23 years. And Eric Trump is telling people, how can someone afford this on Joe Biden's salary?
All right. I'm sorry we cut you off. Elwood, David in Atlanta, you're back. Wait. On.
Well, I was saying, Eric Trump evidently has tweeted or put out that Joe Biden is living in a palatial mansion where he took a picture of this mansion, when in fact Biden sold it 23 years ago. He bought it when it was run down, and he renovated it. And that's another example of a Trump lie and a Trump fraud.
All right, hold on, David. We'll continue with this. But houses aside, it's an important election, and we'll talk more in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for calling. 877-217-5757. We've got a few callers on hold. I think we did lose David in Atlanta, and we'll certainly talk about the presidential election again in this segment. And right now, Lamar White, our dear friend from Bayou Brief, is missing in action. So at the moment, it's just going to be you and me, and that's okay. I'll always enjoy hearing from our listeners, because that's when I learn the most about what's going on in our world, and we have the most enlightened audience in radio right here at WRKF. And President Trump held a rally in Georgia last Friday, less than 3 weeks before the November election. It wasn't a good sign. This in the New York Times today, front page from Asted Herndon, that Trump is still campaigning in what should be a safely Republican state, and in others that should be solidly in his column, like Iowa and Ohio, is evidence to many Democrats that Joe Biden's polling lead in the presidential race is solid and durable. Mr. Trump spent Monday in Arizona, a state that was once reliably Republican, but where his unpopularity has helped make Biden competitive. And for some Democrats, the president's attention to red states is also a sign of something else, of something few in the party want to discuss out loud, given their scars from President Trump's surprise victory in 2016. It's an indication that Biden could pull off a landslide in 12 days, achieving an ambitious and rare electoral blowout that some Democrats think is necessary to quell any doubts or disputes by Donald Trump that Joe Biden won the election. What do you think? 877-217-5757. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Good morning, Mike. You're on Talk Louisiana. Mike, good morning to you.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Just all the Trump lies that comes out of his mouth, just, you know, by the hour. And, you know, all these friends they just believe it, make excuses. To me, it comes down to George Costanza with these people. If you believe it, it's not a lie.
If you
I'm listening to him.
You're fading a bit on me, but the president, there's no doubt, as even his most ardent supporter, Roy Fletcher, says, can fabricate with the best of them, and he has done so. And politicians often tell mistruths or half-truths, but in this case, some believe this president has brought it to a new level. Frida in Gross Tet, good morning, Frida. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, sir. My comment is to say that he didn't want to panic the people. I'm only bothered by the fact that we have, if someone we knew that died, and he didn't tell us anything to give them a chance to even try to survive, to make it, to try to make a decision to say, well, I see what's happening in China right now. Well, I'm going to buy a mask. You know, like all masks were sold out or the price just hiked on it. I mean, he didn't give those people that died a chance.
All right. And you're referring specifically to what, Frida?
To with Trump not telling us about the virus, because he said he didn't want to panic us.
Okay.
But we've seen what was going on in China already.
That's right. And the president says he shut down travel from China, and he did to a large extent. But Americans were still allowed to return who had been in China. And by then, of course, the pandemic was erupting in the U.S., and we have a case in our country in which we have more victims than any country in the world, and we have 4% of the world's population and about 20% of the deaths from COVID-19. The president says if he hadn't acted as he did, those deaths would be 2 million rather than 230,000. 877-217-5757, Henry at the Country Club. Henry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. I hope all is going well with you. We'll try and keep things going until Mr. Lamar gets back with us. But they're talking, Eric Trump is going on and on about Uncle Joe's house. If you compare Uncle Joe's house, maybe, for example, with Senator Cassidy's house on the LSU lake, not a whole heck of a lot of difference. You know, these fellas have been around for a while. They've been, I'm sure, saving their money like you and I have to do, because you never know when we're going to have a rainy day. And you buy real estate, and thankfully, over the long term, it seems to go up. So I don't understand. You know, everybody's not going to live like a Trump, but what do the Trumps want them to live in, a shack?
All right, well, a listener notes, already responding to your remarks, Henry, that this is Steve in Southtown, said he just drove by Bill Cassidy's house. And by the way, I drive by there every morning on the way to Louie's. And there's a sign for Bill Cassidy in the yard and one for Garrett Graves, but not one for Donald Trump. So is our senior senator vacating the president in his hour of need? Where is the Trump sign at the Cassidy house at 3115 Dalrymple? Thank you, Henry, for your remarks. And we'll talk more with Mark Ballard, who's followed the trail of the taxes on that house for some time. Mark coming in just a bit. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, good morning. You know, Biden is the one that called Trump a xenophobe for stopping travel from China right away. He was labeled a racist. And it's funny because, you know, the reason we have so much business with China is because of Bill Clinton's Free Trade with China Act, where we ignored the slave labor there. And it's because of the bribes from Biden. You know, Biden took a lot of bribes from communist China. Let's not ignore that fact, okay?
All right. Well, there are people who watch Fox News a lot, and Patrick says he doesn't to say that. But if you heard President Obama yesterday on the campaign trail in Pennsylvania, he was commenting that the president, our current one, is the only known president to have had a bank account in China. And according to President Obama, if he had had a bank account, Fox News would have been all over him. They would have been calling him Beijing Barry. 877-217-5757. Jabari Robinson, listening in Memphis, the great city, the blues town. He says, I heard about long lines for early voting on the West Bank in New Orleans. I really hope there's a good plan for Election Day. Well, maybe because of the early voting, we won't have big crowds on Election Day. But the early voting has been swift and furious in Louisiana and in other places. And turnout is always a good thing. And it apparently is cutting both ways, as it should. And in Louisiana, we have a state that still has an overwhelming majority of its people who are registered as Democrats. It's a plurality, actually, but a big plurality. But we vote for Republicans often. And the only Democrat in statewide office is John Bell Edwards. Miriam on Government Street. Miriam, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I'm embarrassed about Donald Trump's taxes. I've paid more in taxes, and I don't have the income that he has. And he's supposed to be this big mogul on real estate and all that, and he pays less taxes than I do.
He says that's just smart. That's what he said in the debate with Hillary Clinton 4 years ago, that avoiding taxes is just smart.
That doesn't pay for the country.
No, and it's a country in which he is the commander-in-chief, and we have 330 million Americans, and only 124 million of us pay taxes, and one of them who usually doesn't pay taxes, and sometimes he pays as little as $75 a year, is Donald John Trump, the president of the United States. And by the way, he has all but acknowledged that those records the New York Times have, that the records are accurate. He did that with Savannah Guthrie after, in the first debate, saying he'd paid millions and millions of taxes, and he obviously did not pay millions and millions of taxes. I think it was $750. Let's not cut him short on the amount of taxes he paid. And the listener does note that the president has saved the taxpayers $2 million or thereabouts. Actually, I think it's $1.6 million. I think the president earns $400,000 a year, and he has not taken his salary as president of the United States. And neither did John Kennedy, who was probably the richest guy to be president before Donald Trump. Trump has quite likely more than $1 billion in debt, but his assets are worth, according to Forbes magazine, about $3.2 billion. So the net shows that he is a very rich man, likely the richest man to ever be president of the United States, and yet 10 of the last 15 years he has paid no taxes. 877-217-5757 is your number. We're going to pause for the news, and we'll hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate when we return after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A dozen shopping days away from the presidential election tonight, final debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And Mark Ballard, our Thursday tradition continues with him, the Capitol Bureau Chief, at your service. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And it is also election day for Bill Cassidy, who is seeking another six-year term. He won his election 6 years ago over Mary Landrieu with 56% of the votes. And Mark Ballard did the best profile on Senator Cassidy of this election season in last Sunday's Advocate front page, and Tyler Bridges did an exceptional job covering his primary challenger, Adrian Perkins. And Mark Ballard, as Henry at the Country Club noted, made reference to Bill Cassidy's extremely nice home, which I think Henry's right, probably exceeds any home that Joe Biden's ever lived in. And another listener, Steve in Southtown, said he drove by there this morning and there was a Cassidy sign in the front yard and a grave sign in the front yard, but no Donald Trump sign in Bill Cassidy's house. But one thing about it, it is an extremely nice house, one that I think anybody in Baton Rouge of any class would be very comfortable in. And Mark Ballard, you noted in your story that the senior senator for Louisiana lives in exceptional comfort and doesn't pay a whole lot of property taxes for living there.
Yeah, and that's something I'm going to have to call and find out about. But he pays less in taxes than I do, and his house is about twice the size and in a much nicer neighborhood than mine. Not to say that I'm living in the ghetto or anything, but it just seems like it just raises questions.
Well, and he probably bought that house at a level where it is currently taxed, and in Baton Rouge, that's generally how things are assessed. Now, I've had increases on my assessment, but I don't know that the senior senator has, but you note that it's a house of more than 6,000 square feet, and he pays, less than $4,000 a year in property tax, doesn't he?
I don't have the... I have the sheet, but I don't have it in front of me right now, so I'll trust your numbers on that. I know that my house has doubled in value, according to the tax assessor, since we bought it. We're about 10 years after he bought his house on the University Lake.
Well, he hasn't been on our show in a while, and I'd love for that to happen. He has an open invitation. I love it when officials come on the show, and the assessor's office, where we do this show in the Investar Tower, is right across the hall from us. So the senator, I would suggest that he come do the show and then go across the hall and get a reassessment on that. As you note, it is a 6,400-square-foot mansion on University Lake. So,
well, to be fair, though, how many people go to the assessor and say, you know, I don't think I'm paying enough?
But he is a U.S. senator, so
this is true.
it might be in his interest to do so. And as you say, you have been reassessed, haven't you?
Yeah. Our house is now valued at twice what we paid for it,
but
by the assessor's office. And let me give you a little insight. the senator says he's not been officially or invited by you or any other media to talk and answer questions. So
well, the invitation has just been extended, and I've talked to his people a few times and over the years, and he has not been on in a few years, and certainly I will place the call directly to the powers that be, and we'd love to hear from the senator. So I hope he's saying that if he's officially invited, as in me actually picking up the phone today and calling him, that he will be here, because that will be done. Thank you, Mark. 877-217-5757. Digger in Gonzales. Digger, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Yes, I wanted to say that while you're bringing up the senator's value of his home, that it's worth mentioning that he and his wife, if I'm not wrong, have over 60 years as surgeons, so I'm sure the money they use on that house came from honest earnings.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think anybody's saying that. It's just he should, based on Mark's house and my house and others, considering the lavish nature of the senator's house, he should be paying more statistically in property taxes. But a listener notes, and it's a correct observation, that who's going to run for assessor and say, I'm going to have you pay more in property taxes? It just doesn't happen. So it's a system, it's a system that's ingrained. And in this case, the senator could save himself some political grief. It might cost him a few dollars, which he probably has, but it would save him some grief if he did go to the assessor's office and ask for a reassessment, which I'm sure they would provide. 877-217-5757. David in Shenandoah. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning, Jim. I was just wondering where you and Mr. Ballard, since you're talking about taxes, we have that amendment on the ballot this year, amendment number 6, that increases income limit for homestead exemption and special assessment level. I'd like to see where y'all stand on that.
Mark, you know more about that amendment than I, and as promised, we hope to have Robert Travis Scott back. We talked primarily about Amendment 5 last time, but it is a busy ballot, to say the least, maybe a bit too busy. But what exactly, based on your interpretation, does Amendment 6 do?
Just what the gentleman said, that it's going to ask for, well, it'll be more of a study type of thing, that there would be more reassessments done on property. And I'm under the impression that it's only for Orleans Parish, but I might be mistaken about that.
All right, let's see. I am looking for Amendment 6 right now, and I will see if I can find it. But right now I am not locating it, but it is important. And one of the things that some people are expressing concern about is the ballot is so substantial that it could be a real problem in trying to sift through this, unless you go in and you have read what you're voting for. And Amendment 6, expanded property tax freezes, reads, well, here's the proposed change. The amendment keeps the property assessment freeze program in place, but raises the income level to $100,000. This new threshold would be effective upon adoption and would be adjusted for inflation each year starting in the 2026 tax year. The number for effective homeowners and the local revenue impacts are unknown. The Legislative Fiscal Office notes that most age 65 or older homeowners in the state are already eligible for the assessment freeze. So most, that's based on what I have right here. And good point by David and Shenandoah that we will flesh out as we get closer to Election Day.
But right. Well, 1 in 5 are the most controversial ones, the one about abortion and the one about ITEP are the most controversial ones. And I recommend that people go online at theadvocate.com and pull up the story that Wilson Tell and I wrote about those constitutional amendments. We tried to make them simple enough for people to understand what exactly is going on.
Yeah, and but we've got in Baton Rouge, to give you an example, we've got a lot of judicial races. We have a race for Congress. Garrett Graves is up, and of course, in certain parts of the city, you'll be voting either for or against Cedric Richmond, who's also up. And then we have the Senate race, We have the mayor's race. And we have the presidential race. We've got a busy ballot. So if you are not prepared, you could end up being in that booth long enough where people are wondering what's going on. But 877-217-5757, Paul in Opelousas, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, and good morning to your guests. Just a question. Congressional District Number 5, U.S. Representative, any ideas of what the heck's going on with it? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right. Congressional District Number 5, which probably is headed for a December runoff. That's the one vacated by Ralph Abraham. And it hasn't gotten a lot of attention. I suspect it will get more in the runoff, but... is the runoff going to be between two Republicans, Mark Bauer?
Well, that seems to be the question. Is it going to be, it is a predominantly Republican district, though there is a number of Democrats, and generally it's Monroe-based, even though it kind of comes across the top of the boot all the way over to Bogalusa. But it's primarily Monroe-based because that's the largest TV market, and so... The question in this race is whether Lance Harris from Alexandria can build enough support to get into a runoff with Luke Letlow, who was Abraham's chief of staff, and he is based in Monroe. Or is will the Democrats, that'll be Lamell, who works for Grambling State, and Candy, and can't call her last name, who is a businesswoman in Alexandria, whether they split the vote, Democratic vote, enough that a we end up with two Republicans in the runoff.
Well, in December, we will almost certainly have a runoff there. It is even possible we'll have a runoff for the U.S. Senate. It is possible... And likely we'll have a runoff for the Baton Rouge mayor's office. So the December ballot will be important, and turnout will not be as high. So we'll see what happens. But what are the prospects for a runoff with Cassidy? He's got 14 challengers, and those 14 challengers need to get 50% of the votes plus one to force a runoff. Is that a possibility, or is that pie in the sky?
Well, it is a possibility, but I also think it's pie in the sky. I think that Senator Cassidy is going to win in the primary. But it is possible because the Democrats can put together about 38 to 40% of the vote, and that could be enough with the other folks to keep it Cassidy from getting 50 plus one.
877-217-5757 is your number, and we'll return with more Talk Louisiana with Mark Ballard after this brief timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle, Lauren Hickman, and Katie Ann McDonald are producing today, the tremendous trio. And if you'd like to join the conversation with Mark Ballard as we head the final turn, 877-217-5757 is your number. Yesterday on his Ask the Governor show, Governor John Bel Edwards backed a unified LSU leadership apparatus. He's changed course on this earlier, and I think an interview with Mark Ballard. He said he would be supportive of splitting the president and chancellor's positions. Now he says that he likes it the way it is and that he likes Tom Galligan a lot, and it didn't take long for Jay Darden to get the message. The commissioner of administration, who had expressed interest and had support by many in high places to be the president of the university, has said he will not apply now. And, Mark, it seems that Tom Galligan, who says he's got the bug, may very well get the job.
Well, we still have a couple of months to go on this. The first meeting that the search committee is having will be this afternoon at 1:30, and it'll be organizational, but they say they're going to do a nationwide search, but certainly the front runner has got to be Mr. Galligan right now.
Well, Kevin Cope, who's been on this show many times, as we know, who's a former head of the Faculty Senate, is once again expressing concern that LSU would even consider Mark a guy without a Ph.D. These people in academia get very personal about that.
Well, yes, he doesn't have a Ph.D. in the traditional sense. However, he does have advanced degrees in law, and he is a scholar in law, particularly I believe kind of an admiralty type of law, and he has written scholarly pieces on legal issues. So, yes, he doesn't have a Ph.D. like Dr. Cope does in I believe English literature, but nevertheless, he does have advanced degrees is in his field, which is law.
And it is a political position, and Jay Darden has been student body president, member of the LSU board, metro councilman, state senator, secretary of state, lieutenant governor, and commissioner of administration. So I think that Jay Darden is certainly qualified for this position, but Kevin Cope, who I love, he says this is his, I'm reading straight from his email, Jay Darden's an affable little fellow, but the last thing LSU needs is another local boy trying to figure out how to run an international research university. The LSU faculty like Jay Darden well enough, but only in the sense that people like Bush 43 as someone with whom to share a beer. LSU, a major research institution and multi-campus system, should be headed by a world-class scholar administrator rather than a perennial second-in-command from down the block.
Gee, where does he stand on this? While true that Mr. Darden does not have the scholarly academic credentials that you normally have with a college presidency, his forte is administration, and I think that his interest was in doing the system president job, which is more of an administrative job than the chancellor of the flagship, the Baton Rouge campus, which would be rightfully so a more academic-leaning type of position. And I think that's why he's dropping out of it, because, you know, together you still need to have the academics along with the administrative, the qualities.
All right, 877-217-5757 is your number, and let's go to Bill in Woodgate.
Jim, good morning.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about the Louisiana Constitution, which was ratified in 1974. It's been amended so many times that if you thought about it in terms of weight, it's gained 1,000 pounds. Most of what is in the Constitution ought to be handled by legislation and the legislature, not by amendment. And if you like, the U.S. Constitution's only been amended, 23 times in 250 years.
Are you suggesting we should have a constitutional convention?
Well, yeah, I think we ought to have a constitution that sets broad general principles, as the U.S. Constitution does, but these matters like taxation ought to be handled by the legislature.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Bill Bremley, by the way. Appreciate your call, Mark.
And he's absolutely right. I mean, that the Constitution has been amended so many times that it's hard to follow up. Part of the reason for that is that legislators will put in the Constitution their own little pet projects so that they'll be protected. And that has been a problem. The problem, and there's been efforts to try to call for a new constitutional convention, but there is considerable worry about what the new constitutional convention would actually ingrain into the organic law of the state, because there, you know, let's face it, our legislature is kind of rife with special interests, and those special interests would make a big effort to try to put their particular spin into the Constitution, and that's what's been slowing this idea of reopening the constitutional convention.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be brief. Phil, you're on with Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen. Listen, I wonder if our senators are taking any call today. I know I tried to call into Senator Kennedy's office and Senator Cassidy's office, and I wonder why they're not taking any call.
It probably has to do with Amy Coman Brennan.
Barrett.
I'm sorry, Barrett, being passed out of the Judicial Committee this morning. And so they're expecting lots of calls, and perhaps they're not picking up everyone?
Well, the two Louisiana senators quite possibly will cast the deciding votes. It may very well be 51-49, which would mean that if the two senators had gone the other way, Amy Coney Barrett would not be appointed. If it's 50-50, then Mike Pence casts the deciding vote in favor of her. But 29 years ago, hard to believe it's been that long, but it has, Clarence Thomas was okayed on a 52-48 vote. And to show how things have changed, the two Democratic senators from Louisiana voted for Thomas, and Bennett Johnston and John Breaux. The two Democratic senators in Arkansas, David Pryor and Dale Bumpers, voted against him. But for whatever reason, Breaux and Johnston went for Clarence Thomas, and those were critical votes for him.
Well, yeah, but 20 years ago was...
29, actually.
29 years ago? Okay. Well, it shows you how old I'm getting.
Well, is both it? Of us.
But it was not so much a partisan court. They were looking for a court that had both conservatives and liberals on it, and hoping that between those two sides they could come up with reasonable decisions. And now the court is going to be packed with conservatives, and so it's a different and a much more partisan and harsh environment in Congress right now. So I'm not altogether sure that Kennedy or Cassidy could vote against confirming her, even if they wanted to, which I don't think they do.
Roberto in Mid-City says, I believe new assessments for properties will be made this year, so we can see what happens. Okay. Ricky Causey writes, I predict an upset in Louisiana. I think Biden will edge out Trump by less than 20,000 votes. Biden, by the way, is advertising, notably on urban radio stations now, which is interesting because it was thought that he wouldn't waste any money at all in Louisiana. So there is some reason, and it's quite possible that that's designed to stimulate minority turnout to help Adrian Perkins. But it is curious that Biden is actually spending some money here, Mark. But I would say the odds are really long that he pulls off an upset, as Ricky Causey predicts.
I think you're right. I think it is a long odds for Cassidy to lose this. However, let's go back and think that what helped Governor Edwards was a substantial get out the vote effort in minority communities, and he won by 40,000 votes about. And this could happen again, but I'm not altogether sure. I think agree with the pollster John Cuvion that says it'll cut into their margins of victory, but in the end, we're still going to end up with Donald Trump winning Louisiana and Bill Cassidy winning the U.S. Senate race.
Shaw on Old Hammond. We're short on time, Shaw, but please be brief.
Back to the Constitution. Isn't it the longest in America?
Is the Louisiana Constitution the longest state constitution? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but if I had to put a bet down, I would say yes.
Well,
because of all of the amendments over the years.
Well, Mark, thank you so much as always, and we'll be calling again next week. Sure appreciate
okay.
you. Take care.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good day.
And this is day one of the Fall Member Fest. Our goal is to get 400 new sustaining members. When you become a sustaining member, right now, for just $5 a month or more, the first three payments of your monthly membership will be matched by the member matching fund. So we want you to call in if you can. It would be nice to call before the bell rings at 10 o'clock, 855-893-9753. 855-893-9753 to show your support for WRKF. And thanks to Jeremy and Edie White. Jeremy, of course, has the red stick. Eva Hart, Mandy Lucas, they became sustaining members this hour. The first 3 months of the sustaining memberships, as noted, are matched by the Member Challenge Fund. Yours can be, too, if you do your good deed this morning, 855-893-9753. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. Until tomorrow, thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.